Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The year is 1980. Sydney's streets are filthy, running rampant with crime and corruption. Puberty Blues is on at the cinemas, Ice House is blaring on the stereo, it's humid and dangerous, and a young man has decided to join the police force to fight crime. That man, of course, is my dad. Loose Units, the podcast, was created to tell the cases that wouldn't fit into my first book, Loose Units. But Loose Units was a series of fantastical tales that I wrote based on the real crimes my dad solved on the force back in the early 80s. So this season, Dad and I are finally going to go back to the year 1980. And each week, we'll be going chapter by chapter through Loose Units, the book. And Dad will tell us the story behind my version of events. It'll be thrilling, revelatory, and as always, very, very loose. Welcome to Loose Units Origins. Hello and welcome to Loose Units, the podcast. I'm Paul Verhoeven and I am sick as a dog. Dad, one of the good things about recording remotely is you can't catch whatever I have. Although I know it's not COVID. I know that much.
Well, that's good, Paul. I'm feeling great.
Good.
I'm, just for the listeners' benefit, It's possibly the first time we've ever recorded after lunch. Although, yeah. You know that that's just a metaphorical term for me, because you know that I fast.
Do you?
Yes. So, thank you for feigning shock and amazement. But yeah. I love talking about fasting.
I know. Well, thankfully we're not doing that this episode. But one thing you will need to do is, because I sound like basically just an armpit with the face, I think the best... Look, as long as people can accept the fact that, yes, I sound bad, but, you know, my brain's working just fine.
I don't think you sound bad. And bad is a relative term.
I haven't been sick for years and years and years. My immune system's very robust, and now it's just decided to cave. So, but that's not what this episode's about. We are doing a blow-by-blow, chapter-by-chapter breakdown of my book, Loose Units, and chapter 26 is the one we are looking at this week. It is called They Stole the Money, You Stole My Heart. Part of the reason I like this chapter is because I guess it's got a relatable level of hubris on your part. There's a degree of showing off there. Would you agree with that appraisal?
I must concede on this particular occasion. Mm-hmm. But Paul, I think we may have discussed this before, but you've got Christine using the F word.
Yeah.
And I think we need to put it out there to all the listeners that in almost 40 years of marriage, I stress the word may, have heard Christine use the F word possibly once.
I've heard her use it once. I was actually, we were at your apartment and we were having a drink and she was actually just starting to talk about the police stuff. I had just kind of twisted her arm a little bit and she dropped an F-bomb on me.
Well, I'm in shock.
Yeah, it was weird. It didn't feel...
No, but you've actually got Christine in this chapter using that word. And that's... I know that that's called artistic license.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know if I... Nowadays?
Yeah.
Is it nowadays or nowadays?
I think it's nowadays, but you say nowadays. Now, okay. Shit, I'm overthinking it now. Nowadays.
Nowadays. So nowadays, I've got to be quite frank with you.
Yep.
Even though my name's not Frank. I kind of like women swearing. I like it.
In what respect?
I think it's an egalitarian world we live in.
Are you saying there was a point where it was regarded as improper for women to swear and you think it's
kind of nice when they do.
Yeah, and it's kind of, I mean, you know, have you ever heard that tape by the Dalai Lama where he uses the F word?
No.
Are you serious?
I didn't know he swore.
Oh, it's so wonderful. It's a very, very famous recording of, I don't know why I'm saying the F word. I mean, I never ever say that. I just say fuck. But what he does, he uses the word fuck in about 15 different situational sentences.
To what end?
Meaning that every single time he says it, it has a different meaning. It's so wonderful.
Right, okay.
Anyway, I digress slightly.
You do slightly, but that's kind of what we do here on Loose Units. But one of the reasons I wanted to, you know, really dive into this chapter, Dad, is because it does have a young man trying to impress a girl. That is a very relatable thing.
Yep.
Now, I really don't want to kind of rush this story. So what I will do is I'm going to dip into the to the chapter and read you an excerpt, and then we'll move from there, okay?
Wonderful.
All right, so I'm going to read you an excerpt from the chapter right now. So okay, so just to set things up, over the past few chapters, we've had John and Christine sort of moving pretty fast. So that's where we've left off here. So they agreed a second time to make a real effort not to rush things and not to make things public. This was a pretty easy sell to John in private, all loved up with Christine staring into his eyes, but North Sydney Police Station only had a few women working in it. After arriving at work the following Monday, resolve well and truly steeled, John quickly became aware that this wasn't going to be easy. He noticed that almost every single man working there was either making eyes at Christine or outright propositioning her. Once, he even went to butt in, but she gave him a look that could puncture a tire, so he stood back and let someone else chat her up. They were, however, rostered on together the very next day. John figured he'd finally have a chance to show Christine how restrained and mature he could be about all of this. He wouldn't bring up the topic of them being an item, he wouldn't show any jealousy regarding the primates who fronted up to her every 20 minutes, and he wouldn't make any moves on her while in uniform. Now, could you please take it from there?
It was definitely a weekday,
mm-hmm.
because this story involves a bank, and banks back in the 1980s were only open Monday to Friday.
Even in big cities?
Big, big cities.
Okay.
The biggest cities. The biggest city in Australia, which is actually Sydney.
Yep, yep.
Followed by Melbourne.
Yep, not the best, though.
And then it's all downhill from there.
Yeah, all right.
And they worked relatively short hours because you had all these clerks with those little finger stoppers.
What do you mean? Well,
when they're counting the notes.
Oh, little rubber things?
Right. Yeah, and they'd wear it, and they'd you could make them by just cutting the ends off Ansell rubber gloves, but they were actually supplied. They were, and some of them had little dimples on them.
I don't feel like the finger rubber thumb thing is really the kind of crux of this story. But
I agree, but I'm just going with it,
just building it up.
Okay. It had been raining the night before, and I thought I was an okay driver.
Right,
I'd successfully completed advanced driving in my teen years. I'd been a bit of a rat bag. I'd been on lots of rallies. I'd done a lot of off-road work. I'd ridden bikes. I love a bit of adrenaline. And I've got to be very honest with you and the listeners to say that I also had a desire to show my driving skills to Christine.
Right.
And bearing in mind that the speed of the police cars back then on general duties during a normal day-to-day patrol was around about 30 kilometres an hour.
That's not very fast. And that's the speed you would be going if you were doing the thing that we've talked about before.
Yeah, cruising.
Fishing also.
Yeah, so yeah, yeah.
Could you just give us a refresher on what fishing is?
Well, can you imagine if you just drove around on patrol at 60, 70 kilometres an hour? You just wouldn't see anything.
You would pass any wrongdoing quite fast.
And a lot of the crims that were doing break and enters between, generally speaking, between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m, as we've outlined many times before, were always in the side streets, but never too far away from the main road. Why is that?
Well, because more cars, right?
No, because they didn't know the area.
Oh, of course. So they're just going to take the main kind of arterials. They're not going to...
Correct. Yeah. And if they get caught, if the police happen to by chance come upon them in the act of committing an offence, i.e. a break-in or a steal, they can hot-foot it because they'll generally have a driver.
Yeah.
In fact, there are a couple of really interesting things, Paul, that a lot of people don't know, but good break and enter merchants. Isn't that funny? We used to call them merchants as though they were members of a sort of an elite sort of trading sort of Dutch colonial group, like a guild of, you know, hatted traders dealing in tea and spices. But that's how they were referred to. It's an almost sort of an honorary title.
But why? I mean, what are they? Because a merchant sells things. I guess if you take your purloined goods to a fence and then you kind of have to sell them.
Correct. But I remember when we had numerous break and enters. So when Christine and I were in the police force in the 80s.
Yeah.
You recall we lived in a block of units in DY.
Tanami Flats. Yep.
And pretty well every single apartment had been broken into. And one day, one fateful day, Christine virtually caught these heavy, heavy crims. They'd just done a break and enter in our building.
Right.
And Christine dashed out and grabbed the rego and a full description of the car. By the time the police, who were very, very keyed into this, because it was a notorious gang committing thousands. Their MO was exactly the same. And within minutes, they had the car pulled over. Not one of the stolen items was in the car.
Hang on. What?
Yep. That's how quickly these guys work. They have a fence, a middleman.
So, yeah, explain what a fence is for the listeners.
Okay, so if you go and buy stolen, or let's say you commit a break-in and steal, you go into the house.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to make this sort of a how-to manual on how the crim works, but I'm going to explain to people how they do it. And it's pretty basic getting into a place. That's a no-brainer. There are many ways of getting into a house because not everyone is so aware or can just leave windows, doors. You know, they think, oh, no one can climb up 10 feet. But the first thing the break and enter merchant does when they get into the place is they check their egress.
What does that mean?
Check a way of how they're going to get out if the shit hits the fan. So break and enters are not always committed like sexual assaults. Sometimes they're committed whilst the occupants are inside the flat or the house.
Yeah.
Not uncommon.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if a family's engrossed in a particular show on, let's say, Netflix, and it's really getting to a really great sort of point in the film and there's just absolute concentration. Not uncommon for crims to come in, see that the family are engrossed in a TV show, and go and just ransack the rooms, albeit quietly, but they know exactly what they're doing. So the first thing that a good crim will do, they'll find out where a travel bag or a big suitcase is. They'll lay it out on a bed, generally a double bed. They will then begin scouring. Now, they're working by the clock. Now, like people that are bankers and teachers and doctors and street sweepers, we all know what we're going to do that day, generally speaking. If there's an emergency or a fire, an ambo, you have these entrenched protocols through vast training. So do the break and enter merchants. They know exactly what they want. And they're working very, very quickly. And don't for 1 minute imagine, listeners, that you can outsmart someone that's broken into your home. They know where the gear's kept. They just, it's intuitive because after all, they are human. In fact, one could argue that they have developed a marvelous sense of how fellow humans think because they would go home, for example, and they live in dwellings and they would want to hide their booty, wouldn't they?
So they go, where would I hide
where would I hide it?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's almost sort of, and there are lots of really, really good crims, I say good, that would come into a house, occupants in or occupants not home, sometimes the occupants would come home and it would take them days, weeks, or months to realize that stuff had been stolen. And in that building we lived in, Paul, in Darley Road in Manly, we had a lady that lived, her name was Michelle, and they broke into her apartment and they stole a lot of very valuable jewelry.
Yes.
Which was concealed at the back of a cupboard, and it took her weeks It wasn't until she was going out one night she went to retrieve one of her rings
that she realized. Okay. So it was so well hidden that she didn't even bother to check whether they'd taken it.
That's right, because they're so. Some of them are really tidy. I mean, some of them go in there like a sort of a tornado and just throw things around and just go crazy. But so they get into the house and then they steal the gear. But some of the crims, what they do is they go out the front of the property. They either hop into a stolen car.
Mm-hmm.
They may have a driver, but sometimes within minutes, they meet up with the fence. That's the guy that will buy everything off them. So when and if they get caught, the original offenders, they've got nothing, no gear. So that's kind of clever.
A couple of weeks ago, you were telling us the story, and it's in the book. The chapter's around track work. So yourself and Dunn pulled that carload of guys up, and you said to me you were convinced they were either on their way to burgle someone or coming back from burgling someone.
Yep.
Now, is it possible that they had already handed some stuff? No, they'd have money on them. Surely they'd have shitloads of cash.
Right? They'd meet up later just to settle. But it's very important with stolen goods that they be moved on really quickly. And for example, tradesmen know this, that all their tools that are very expensive, particularly power tools, you can sell those, you can offload those. And I hate to say it, listeners, but guess who's buying them? Other tradesmen. They're not being sold to, you know.
Who else would need them?
Who else would need high quality tools? Your home handyman is not going to buy a massive rotary hammer drill that's worth about $2,500.
You're not going to get one for your kid at Christmas. That's specifically being bought by
tradesmen. And that might sound a little bit harsh.
Yeah.
But if you actually analyze what we're talking about, it's actually a no-brainer, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So there you introduce that human element of greed and an opportunity. And the opportunity has arisen out of someone else's misfortune.
Yeah.
So that's the reality and that's a fact of life.
First of all, okay, so let's wind back a little bit. You were mentioning drivers and you were mentioning, driving. And then you mentioned, you know, the kind of getaway guy for a burglar. But we're going to get back to that topic shortly. What did you do on this particular day that was specifically so stupid or embarrassing?
Well, I just saw this as an opportunity. We had a call came over the police radio, VKG, two beeps, which sort of gets everyone, you know, really, really very attentive.
Yeah.
And it was for hold up alarm, which is how it used to come across. And it gave a location in McMahon's Point near North Sydney Railway Station.
I know the one, yeah.
And we were about maybe 4 or 5 kilometres away.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a sense very quickly who's responding, because lots of cars on the road. But, you know, the cars on the road might be involved in other incidents. If they're at another job for a hold-up alarm, they're not going to... Like, let's say they're at an accident. They're not just going to say to everyone at the accident, look, I'm sorry, folks, we're heading off to a hold-up alarm. That's not how it works. So VKG will say, 6th Division, any cars in the vicinity of the Commonwealth Bank, Blue Street, McMahon's Point.
Yep.
There's a hold-up alarm in progress. First car to advise. So
the first person to get there is... Statistically speaking, how often is that a false alarm and how often is it real?
95% of the time, it's a false alarm.
But still.
But you don't know that.
Yeah.
That's why in the city, whenever there's a... like a fire alarm, and those people, and I think most people will be guilty of this, or if they're staying in a hotel, they hear the alarm go off. What do most people do? They don't leave the building.
Nothing.
Particularly
at all.
If it's 2 a.m. in midwinter in Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
How many people come out in their pajamas?
No one.
No, but how many should?
That's so...
But people are very laissez-faire, and then all of a sudden they wake up to the smell of smoke.
Yep.
They come out. They're in the hallway, flames everywhere. They run to the top of the building, the fire's making its way to the top with them.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're expecting. Are they expecting a helicopter to come by and just pick everyone up? I mean, are they look, it's the way. That's so that's what happens. You become slightly apathetic, blasé. That's why two fire engines in Sydney or any city or town, two fire engines respond to every alarm, because it's an AFA, an automatic fire alarm. But occasionally it's an AFA set off by, guess what? By smoke and fucking heat.
Yeah.
So same thing with a robbery. And so Christine grabs the radio and says 6-3, 6-5 responding. They go, thanks, 6-5. And we're off. And I kind of reached across, something I shouldn't have done. That was the first mistake I made, that it's not my job to turn the lights and siren on. It's Christine. And if Christine says to me, because sometimes if it's a really serious job, you might proceed, and it's a bit of a grey area in emergency services, but many times in the police force, we would respond lights only, no siren. And that actually makes good sense. Imagine if you're one of the offenders, you're in the middle of an armed robbery, you've got guns loaded, shotguns pointed at staff, and you hear sirens, that can trigger a whole shitload of very, very bad consequences for lots of people.
So was that basically policy not
to... It was kind of a protocol, Paul, and I'd like to know what the police force thinks about it now. The double-edged sword,
yeah,
and here's the problem, if you barrel and kill a pedestrian... and they're on a pedestrian crossing, you're fucked.
Oh, because they... Yeah. Yep, that makes sense.
Because they're going to go, hang on a sec. You know, sirens and lights in all emergency service vehicles don't give the driver permission. It's not carte blanche under the Motor Traffic Act to just do what you like.
Of course.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
And if you go through a red light and you T-bone someone and kill them, which happened in Sydney, a highway patrol car, I think it was 2 years ago, was heading in a certain direction, saw a lady on her mobile phone. He's chucked a Huey on a major road and chased her, and he went through a red light. Think about this. He's chasing a woman who was using a mobile phone. On the way to trying to catch up to her, he went through a pedestrian crossing. Through a red light, and he killed someone. I mean, that's why the public tend to get a little bit, you know, a little bit pissed off about these situations. So, Paul, you're heading to an armed robbery in progress. You think it is. It's an alarm, but you're thinking, you know, is it real? I don't know. I've been to 100. The last 100 were not real. But then again, every now and again, something horrendous pops up. You have a hostage situation. There are numerous things. So at a certain point, you can decide to turn the siren off.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I recall working, and VKG occasionally would put an announcement, like a message over the radio saying all cars proceeding to a certain type of job, might be a siege.
Yep.
No sirens.
Oh, so they tell you not to.
They tell us. But then there's a lot more onus on the driver to be incredibly, you know, just really, really drive safely. And it's a fine line between driving safely, carefully, being aware of everything happening, but also you're also thinking about the fastest, best way to get to this particular job in light of, depending on what time of day it is. Most armed robberies occurred in the afternoons for obvious reasons, and that being that that's when there was a lot more cash on the premises.
Right.
And it was a fair drive from Cremorne to McMahon's Point.
Mm.
And, you know, Christine's the senior person. She has the right to completely control, as best she can, the way in which I drive. And if she thinks I'm driving, believe you me, I have driven as the junior man with police that just basically, they'd tell you to slow down.
Yeah.
And some police would tell you to speed up.
So
go faster.
That is something interesting and is worth revisiting, and that is the fact that, yes, you were the junior man. Mum was, you know... So as a junior man, you are driving, and we need to reestablish that. Mm. The junior person drives. Yep.
Always.
And the senior person directs.
Correct. And unless, of course, occasionally, which used to really kind of... Because I loved driving. I really enjoyed driving. I still to this day love... I actually love driving. And occasionally you'd get a sergeant that hadn't been on the road that much, and he would say, I'm driving. And that was surreal.
Oh, so they're allowed to. They just don't.
They're senior. They can do what they like. So they drive because they like to sort of keep their hand in, which is fair enough.
Okay.
And some of them were ex-Highway Patrol officers.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my best friends in the police force, he was ex-Highway Patrol. Yeah. And I'll tell you what, we're talking next level driving at a standard, from my recollections, one friend in particular, that there's no way I could drive the way he did.
Yeah.
I mean, he was brilliant, but he was also, at one stage, he was the commissioner's driver.
Right.
So you can imagine the level of expertise. So we're heading down to this job, and it had been raining. In fact, what I might do for the listeners sometime in the next few weeks,
mm-hmm.
if I'm over that way, I'm going to stand and photograph, because the event that that came to fruition that day, it had been raining the night before, and I came round from the Pacific Highway, and I really fanged it, and Christine wasn't saying anything because she's also thinking about her role as the responding first officer, about she's got certain things that we have to do. One of the most important things about going to an urgent job, because you don't know whether it's real or not, the onus on the first responding vehicle, be it the fire brigade, ambulance or police force, the very first thing you have to consider is to get some facts back to your radio to let other cars know that it's a false alarm. Because if you think about it, these cars are coming in from everywhere. And because it's McMahon's Point, it's very close to the city. So what they do is they combine the city and North Sydney channels so that the city cars can also have an opportunity. Because if no cars are responding from North Sydney, they can then open the channel up and get cars from the city to make their way across the bridge.
Yeah.
Now, what's happening is that a lot of police are actually risking their lives to get to a job, and it's very important for first responder to be able to decide very quickly, yes, it's a false alarm. Get on the radio, then they can call all the cars off. And when they call all the cars off, they get every single one of them, because they know who's responding, because they've already got that written up, because those cars acknowledged, they're written up, then they get every single one of those cars to acknowledge that they've heard the instructions that they are no longer required, and then everyone backs off. But can you imagine going to a job, being the first responder, going in there and just getting involved in chit-chat, and you can all of a sudden hear these sirens coming from across the harbour bridge, and then you think, hang on a sec, shit, that they're coming to this job and I'm here chatting with the manager and I'm just about to have a cup of tea. And you've got all these cars barreling and some of them will be doing breakneck speed, and some of the cars responding will invariably be Highway Patrol.
Yeah.
And they are made for speed. So, as we're coming around the corner, the adrenaline's pumping, but I'm ashamed to say this, Paul, that I just saw this as an opportunity to...
show off.
To show off to Christine. And I fanged it round this corner and I totally lost control of the police car.
Shit.
And we went into a 360-degree spin. There were, I would estimate, well, it's right outside a railway station entrance, exit. It's a very, very busy part of North Sydney. I would estimate at least 500 people. Well, people come out of the train. It's a major, major business centre. It's a hub. It's a really busy railway station. It's 10:30 in the morning. There's a lot happening in that area. There's a lot of business, a lot of banks. It's a really crowded area. People from the city come out into North Sydney. It's a major, major business hub. At least that's on both sides of the road. And what happens more so, dare I say it, even though today... I mean, every time you see a police car, ambulance or fire brigade, most people look at it, don't they? If it's under siren.
Yeah.
And so I already had a captive audience. I'm trying to impress Christine.
Yeah.
I tried to correct the car as it began to lose control. And I oversteered and I completely, through gross stress, panic, lack of experience... It was everything that could go wrong did go wrong.
Yeah.
And now in the book, I'm not sure that this is for artistic license. You describe the car as a Bentley, but it was actually a 7 Series black BMW.
Right.
Which is still a really serious motor car. More serious, more prestigious back in the 80s, I can assure you, where those types of cars were fairly uncommon. And there was this driver just watching this... spinning police car coming toward him, and it would have ended in, I mean, it could have been catastrophic. I could have killed Christine. I could have, you know, it could have been, we could have been trapped. There are lots and lots of things.
But that didn't happen.
No, it didn't happen. But then I had to, Christine was singularly, utterly, totally pissed off and unimpressed.
Yeah.
And thought, I can imagine what she was thinking. And I knew it. She didn't have to say it. And I just thought, I just didn't even want to be there. I wanted to shrivel up. And
but where were you physically at that point?
Well, inadvertently, because of inadvertently what I'd done is that I'd actually spun the car out of control. And basically, when Christine opened her door, she basically looked 5 metres directly in front of her. And it was the front of the bank. So I'd committed... I'd committed a cardinal sin, which was drummed into us from day one at the police academy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just common sense. And that is that you don't pull up outside a bank. What happens if they come out brandishing sawn-off shotguns and Christine cops a body full of pellets?
So that would have been your fault?
What, 100%. What, without a doubt. And Christine... Look, I put her life at risk twice. I put members of the public's life at risk. I put the guy in the BMW. He probably shat himself. He was visibly shaken. Everything about this was not cool. And I think it's kind of cool in a way that I'm talking about it, that I actually told you the story originally, Paul.
Right.
It's not one of my best things.
The real hero here is you.
No. But you know what I mean. Like, it's a big thing to sort of... to admit to that. I mean, I didn't have to tell you that story because it's terrible. It's just bad on so many levels. But I guess the thing is that emergency service personnel that are listening to this podcast, be they in Australia or overseas, you know, they've all, or a lot of them will probably have stories that are, you know, not dissimilar, where for whatever reason they've kind of, you know, thrown protocols out and perhaps were trying to impress a fellow officer that, you know, maybe they were just had romantic feelings for, or not even that, just two women working together, two guys working together, maybe just two people just wanting to show the driver, just wanting to show what a good driver he is and just making a complete cock up of it. And the good news, Paul, is that it was a false alarm. And Christine realised that day that it was very, very dangerous and uncool for us to work together. She, and I was a little bit surprised, she decided to put in for a transfer.
So, I mean, here's something I've been thinking about. This is not me accusing you of anything, but why her and why not you? If she'd been there longer and if she'd kind of, you know, had longer to kind of establish ties and build up stuff, whereas you're new, wouldn't it make more sense for you to transfer?
Well, yes, but she applied for a transfer without telling me.
Right.
And as it turns out, Paul, she applied for a very, very exciting job that I won't mention yet.
Right.
But it involved a very, very exciting section of the New South Wales Police Force.
So this is something she wanted to do anyway?
Yeah, I think she'd been thinking about it. She was already, you know, pursuing the plain clothes side of things. And, you know, it's not as though... I mean, I didn't have a lot of experience and I was still pretty green.
Mm.
And in fact, Paul, I was still in my first year of the New South Wales Police Force. And,
yes,
you know, I mean, I could have got a transfer to perhaps another station, but being at a head station, North Sydney, I mean, the options were very, very limited.
Gotcha. Okay.
And I would then have had to have spilt the beans and say, because they'd say to you, look, why do you want to transfer? What's wrong? I'd shown no signs of not being happy. In fact, the opposite. I loved every single day. I loved going to work. I lived for the police force. I lived for it. I couldn't wait to do night shifts. I couldn't wait because they were just unreal. And if you got two police on a car that were both keen and observant, and I got to work with a lot of very senior police, a few that I still to this day think about that taught me how to be a good street police officer. And it's it just doesn't happen overnight. And when you worked with police that had been on the road for 30 years, they see things that mere mortals don't. And I just sometimes I could not believe the level some of these people were working at. It was as though, I guess to put it very simply, the baddies had sort of a luminous glow about them. And they could just see, like the Matrix. But a lot of people just look out and just see, you know, numbers or whatever. But some people see beyond that. They see
You're like Neo is what you're saying.
Yeah, and they just see things. And no, it's incredible. It's just, and it's intuitive. And because I'd been a bit of a psycho rat bag as a young kid, believe you me, I was pretty bad as a young kid. And that gave me an edge. It truly did. Because I had seen, and some of the guys that went to my school, some of them were pretty heavy dudes. And some of the blokes that I knew at school went to jail. And my father, who taught at a really rough school on the Northern Beaches, I mean, that's a great yarn that we'll come to sometime in the future about that ex-pupil of Dad's.
We'll get to that later. That's
a heavy story.
Something I do want to say is that, just real quick, in closing, so you've got... You know, you learn something from everyone you work with, right? You learn something from the senior man that you work across from. You pick up different things. What do you think you learned from Mum in your brief time working across from her as a cop?
How to remain calm, objective, logical. As everyone knows, well, not everyone knows, but I'm putting it out there, and that is that Christine is a woman of few words. So I can be blabbing on in a group situation, just crapping on. And I kind of sometimes think that people are sort of, you know, glazing over slightly. But then if Christine decides to say something, she says it with great, with great purpose. Mm. And she says she is actually a woman of few words. So my point being that I learnt... that you know, she had a different style. But I think different styles of policing are also very important. And you know that I worked with Sue.
Yes.
And she was next level. In fact, I preferred working with Sue than working with, dare I say it, quite a few of the blokes. There were a degree of men at North Sydney Police Station that, quite frankly, that it was scary working with them. It was actually scary because they were actually not competent. And it was embarrassing sometimes going out with some of these people.
Right.
So the sex thing really is not an issue, be them male or female.
Mm.
It was how they were, what type of, how they projected themselves and how they led by example.
Yeah.
And, in the police force and emergency services, if you're working with a really good, strong, competent senior person, they make or break you. And in the fire brigade, if you're working with a dangerous officer, they can kill you.
Yeah.
Very easily.
Or if you're working in the police force and you're dating an officer and he's trying to impress you, he can almost kill you.
Well, I think that the dating thing and working, combining that with a level of danger is a recipe for extreme potential disaster. And
I
say it's just absolutely, when I look back on it, I think. But Christine, of course, being, you know, dare I say it, not so much now, but back then, the sensible one. She made a call, and I remember when she told me, I thought, shit, I've blown it. And she looked at me and she just said, look, you know, if we want this to sort of blossom, we can't work together. And we also wanted anonymity. We didn't want to tell the world.
But things did continue to escalate, as next week's chapter will actually, you know, lay out in pretty stark detail, because one of the things about you guys is that your courtship was very quick. So next week, on Tuesday, you will hear about the next step in Christine and John's blossoming relationship on the police force in the 1980s. Thank you so much for listening to another red-hot episode of Loose Units, the podcast. I'm Paul Verhoeven, that's John Verhoeven, and we will see you when? At the end of the week for an episode of Loose Ends. Stay frosty? Is that a thing?
No, but I hope you get well soon, Paul.
Thanks, Dad. I feel like crap, but I'm just going to go dunk my head in a humidifier.
Anyway, you sound great, and as usual, love doing the podcast with you. And cheerio to everyone.
Okay, bye, everyone.
Bye.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.